With AI, deep fake, voice mimicking, video,
Right.
how do I know that Aaron is actually calling me when your
Right.
voice can be so easily mimicked and your video
Yeah.
can also? So it's not there
Absolutely.
yet. The voice may
Yeah.
be, but video is still not there, but it will be.
Sure. You're listening to Protect It All, where Aaron Crowe expands the conversation beyond just OT, delving into the interconnected worlds of IT and OT cybersecurity. Get ready for essential strategies and insights. Here's your host, Aaron Crowe.
Hey, thank you for joining me on another episode of the Protect It All podcast. I'm super excited today to have a CEO of a company that I've been working with and use products for a long time. So why don't you introduce yourself, tell us who you are, a little bit about your background, and a little bit about your product and your company as well.
Sure, Aaron, and I'm excited to be here. Know your background and ha happy to be here and share thoughts and speak and discuss. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Waterfall Security, an industrial cybersecurity company focusing on connecting OT and IT in the right way, meaning protecting the OT while allowing good connectivity to IT. Our company started with a technology called unidirectional security gateways, enabling sharing data from closed OT networks to the outside world, mainly for monitoring, for sharing production information, enabling data sharing to the cloud, to third parties, etc. This is where we started. Back in the days, we focused on more of the regulated part of the market, selling to nuclear power gen and power gen in general, and spread out from there dramatically to practically every type of critical infrastructure and industrial verticals across the globe. This was our flagship product and technology until recently, where we announced late last year a new product called HERA, which stands for Hardware Enforced Remote Access, which is what we think the new standard in remote access for OT and closed networks. Going really good, getting really good feedback from our customers and prospects, and very excited again to be here and talk about whatever we want to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. And most people here know my background coming from power utility, working as an asset owner, having power plants and generation across the state of Texas, substations and mines and all the different things. But, the biggest of those being a nuclear power plant in the state of Texas. And it was amazing how different things were at that site versus all of the rest. Like the security was different, the things that it took to get in. And I tell a story. One of the first things I got hired, or after I got hired at the company, we had to roll this stuff out. We had to put weather stations and secure satellite communications at every facility we had. It was after a winter storm thing that happened in Texas. So this was kind of a response to, how are we going to maintain, communications, et cetera, right? So I installed these weather stations and emergency comms in every facility we had, from our corporate headquarters in downtown Dallas to every power plant, every mine, all that type of stuff. I did it across, again, more than 40 something sites in about 3 months. And that was from the time of finding vendors and finding a product and come up with an architecture and paying for it and doing site surveys and all that kind of stuff and installing. It took me, so I did 40 something sites in 3 months, and I installed it in the parking lot at the nuclear power plant because it was the only place I could install it. And it took another year and a half before we actually got it into the control room because it had to have a penetration. And you and I know why that's so complicated, but it just goes to show the rigor of the making sure that, and it's not just, complicated to be complicated. It's complicated because, we were making a penetration, drilling a hole, putting a cable into the control room, which has to be protected from the, nuclear radiation and all of that. There's a big, storm door, not storm door, you know, a missile door that protects the control room. And obviously the whole reason is they shut that door and those operators don't leave. If there's a meltdown, they stay there indefinitely until they control, because they're controlling the reaction. So it just goes to show and why you guys started out in nuclear, I'm sure, because of the rigor and the requirements of that. But they're not the only ones that need the things that we need. And I love the fact that you guys have branched out. But before we dive into the remote access thing for a moment, because we do have a vast, vast difference in people that listen to this podcast, do you mind giving us a high level, you know, 50,000 foot view, you know, 90 second elevator pitch of what is a data diode? Why is it different? And how does it enhance versus a firewall? Which is a similar use case, but not exactly the same, and why it's so different and so much of a difference and why we need it in these types of spaces.
Okay. I can promise 5 minutes, and I take the stairs and not the elevator, so it will be a bit longer.
There we go.
But, you know, before explaining what it is, let's talk about why. Okay. So, you know, I'm assuming that everybody that listens for us will agree when I'm saying, guys, we would like the control network, the network controlling, let's say, a turbine of a power plant, not even a nuclear one, just a power plant, won't be accessible from the internet. Right? I mean, you're saying like this. I'm guessing all the
yes.
all the audience are nodding. You know, same with a railway signaling system. We would really prefer when we're sitting on a train driving in 100 miles per hour, not to have that network accessible from the internet. Yes. Okay. So preferably these networks, controlling, you know, that dangerous things that have safety issues, things that can end up blowing up or exploding or etc., we would prefer them not to be accessible from the internet because beep will happen. So shit will happen. On the other hand, so we would like them to be segregated, you know, closed network, not connected to the outside world, you know, run by itself as secure as it gets. It's not 100% secure. Nothing is 100% secure, but at least it's not accessible from the internet. All of the online attacks, you know, all of the online risks of malware propagation and virus getting in and remote access attacks and etc. off the table. We are better off. On the other hand, we need data to run our business efficiently. We need data that's produced inside these networks. You've been an asset owner. You know, to run your business safely, securely, profitably, you need to know what's going on in each and every one of your sites that are producing something. Okay, again, it can be a power plant or 20, and it can be a railway. It can be an offshore platform, anything. Okay, at the end, you have the company, and they need to know what's going on. So for them to know what's going on? if we're talking about, you know, regular networking and et cetera, you need systems. Let's make it simple. So we are an asset owner. We have 20 power plants and we want to know what's going on in our headquarters in Texas. So headquarters have the ability to send a query. Usually it's outside of the network, over the internet, to the network of the power plant somewhere else in Texas or in another state. Query a system that's inside the control network and the result is being sent out. And this is how usually things are done. Sometimes data is just being pushed out, but in most cases you query. You ask for certain information and you get it back and you're happy. The problem is you need access. You need network access over the internet, over public network, over everything to get into that control network and get the information. Doing that you are happy because, you know, you have the data that you need, but you've opened up the control network to the internet. Now it's internet accessible, which we just said is not a good idea. Fixing that is why Waterfall was founded. Enabling businesses to have the data they need in real time, 24/7, anywhere they need it, without opening up the control networks to all of the bad things that happen when you connect them to the internet. Okay. In most cases, and today it's changing a bit when we'll talk about it later, but in most cases, even today, the main motivation to open up and connect a control network outside is to share information. Okay, most of them, most of the time. So let's talk just about that part of the market, which, as I say, is big and growing. Mm-hmm. That is what we were set to fix and build Waterfall to solve. You should say. But you won't, because you know better. You should say, so put a firewall at the perimeter of the control network, and we're good.
Sure.
You know, right. Powerful. You know, firewalls are perfect. Everybody uses firewalls for decades. What's the problem? So there's no problem with firewalls as a technology. It's really good technology. There are really good products out there, really good professional companies, you know, producing and selling them. The issue is they were never designed to sit in between a control network, controlling a physical process, and the internet. Okay, they were designed to sit in between two IT networks and verifying what goes in and out. You know, a firewall is like a bouncer in a club. Okay, you have that you know, big bouncer, and behind him is the door of the club. Now you want to get in. He asks you, okay, show me ID. You show him an ID. You look like your picture on the ID. Your birthday is okay. Go in. You know, you show him an ID and you're below the age. Stay out. Okay. But like a firewall, okay, and this is what firewall does. It's a router with rule sets on packets. Okay, now that bouncer, you know, you can run really fast and bypass him. You know, you can show him a fake ID and he let you in. You can give him $100 bill and he let you in. You can shoot him and run in. Okay, there's a lot of things you can do and get yourself inside the club. Now, when this is a control network, controlling a railway system, getting in is all you need. Okay, getting in, now there's a safety issue. Now the rail can derail. Now the power plant, the turbine can get out of sync. Now, you know, you said shit is okay. Now shit can happen.
Correct.
It's... You don't, the only need that, the only thing that you need is to be able to access. Once you're in, that's enough. Now you can do bad things. Even if they'll catch you afterwards, you're still there. You can infect stuff. You can, mix things and mess up things, and now we need to fix it and clean it and look everywhere if there's any residual things. We need to shut down the systems, go back to safety, come back. This is horrible.
Uh-huh.
And again, firewalls are like that. They verify packets, they check them, they do their best, but sometimes you can bypass them. You can show them fake credentials. You can find ways to trick their logic. You know, there are many ways to do that. And, you know, each and every one of the cyber attacks that are public and we know, and those that are not public, and each and every one of those were were successful because someone managed to get through one or more firewalls on the way. So firewalls are good in your bank because they can back up your data, they can run your data from other places, they can restore information from cold backups and get things back in. It's not good. It doesn't fit when this is an offshore platform and now it breaks. You cannot restore from backup an offshore platform. If something breaks, you need to fix it. Okay. So it just not the right thing. So recapping all of this really long elevator pitch, I told you it would be longer. We designed a unidirectional security gateway, which is a specialized hardware, which we deploy instead of that perimeter firewall. Okay, that hardware is capable by the way it's built, by the physics that it's built. And I'm not going to get too deep into technology and so in this podcast. But the hardware is capable of sending data only in one way, only from this side to this side. Okay, nothing can ever go back. By the way, this is why waterfall is called waterfall, because, you know, water can go only one way. Yeah. And there's like a physical barrier that doesn't allow waterfall to go back up. And we have software on each side of our gateway. One part of it is inside the control network, gathers the data, sends it out through the outbound one-way-only hardware, where our software on the external side gets that data and propagates it and sends it to whatever recipient it's intended to. So we have the system that gathers the data that the asset owner needs, that our software was designed and configured to gather. Let's say it's, you know, production information, you know, rates, you know, it can also be security alerts. It can be network management system, network monitoring information. It can be logs from systems, whatever is needed on the outside by centralized engineering and by the company and headquarters, sometimes by vendors that are helping you by remote monitoring for preemptive maintenance. The gear that you have, we get our software gathers that data, sends it out down the waterfall through the one-way-only hardware that can only send data in one direction, and then it's being downstream to the recipients because the hardware is built in a way that it's physically capable of sending data really only in one way. Again, think of it as a waterfall. So nothing can go back in. Okay, there's a physical block that doesn't allow waterfall. It doesn't allow water going in that direction, doesn't allow anything to go. It doesn't allow, it doesn't have the capability of. So
physically impossible.
It's physically impossible. So we have like a physical barrier on the IT communication. And not like that bouncer. You can't fake an idea and tell the waterfall, let's climb up, you know, let the water climb up the water. It doesn't work. You can't try. You can't run fast. You can't fake. You can't bribe. You can't trick with, you know, logic. There's nothing that you can do. So we gather that information real time, send it out, share it with the external sources, providing, in many cases, digital twins of systems that are inside the OT network. Now they are outside and you know, the company at headquarters, use those. Sometimes we replicate, as you said, log files and alerts and traps and signals. And then send them to your vendor and then go and process that and you know, do whatever they need with that data. data is being sent out, nothing is capable of getting back in. Your control network is off the grid as we wanted, but we have all of the data that we need outside, in real time, at the hands of the systems and people that we want them to have the data to go and use them. And as you said at the beginning, you have past experience with our technology. It is so well designed, and this is why we you know call our product a unidirectional gateway, because it's a whole system. It's not the hardware, it's not the software, it's a whole system that is built. So this very strange way of solving a problem in the otherwise fully bidirectional, fully everything, access everything type of networking is capable of being deployed in real life environments, in complex environments like power plants, like railway systems, yep. like chemical plants, water systems, and still work almost seamlessly. Okay, the people that need the data just have the data as before. They are super happy. They can do what they want, and the people that are responsible for cyber, for risk, for continuity, they are really happy because nothing can get back in. You know, they can now take that big issue that they had before and invest their funds and time and resources on other things. Now more important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's truly like the best of both worlds. You know, you go into these places and, especially back in the beginning of time, whenever we were putting these firewalls or connecting these networks, and, you know, a lot of the operators or the plant managers would be like, I'll air gap. You hear air gap all the time, right? You know, I've never been into a system that's actually air gapped, even the ones that claim to be, because they always have that back channel thing that, oh, well, yeah, we connected over there because this company needs to monitor. Okay, so it's not air gap, but this truly gives you the ability to be an air gap system. I can send data out. One of the jokes in power, I'm sure you've heard this, but you know, we only generate electricity to make sure that we have enough data, pi data, to generate enough pi data for, you know, the executives to see the dashboards, right? Because OSI sure, Pi sure. is a product that is used in power generation, and it has all the monitors and all the things. And that's a prime use case for this in power utility. And Waterfall is to be able to get that pi data. So you've got a pi server that sits inside the control network, and it's getting all the real-time data or near real-time data from those sensors and temperatures and pressures and valve positions and all that type of stuff. And it sends that data. But in these environments, especially in a nuclear power plant for as the original use case, I would have to be in the control room to see those screens. Well, the plant manager will like, I want to be able to see that data outside. Well, you can't, because as soon as I connect that, then now I don't have a air gapped environment. Now I've just bridged that network with the network that your corporate laptop is on. You know, I've added risk to my environment, right? So this is in theory a one outbound only way, making a copy of that data, like you said, like a digital twin of this data. And I've got a Pi server now sitting on the outside of it. I'm getting that data outside. So now that laptop could connect in. So use that use case as an example for wherever you put this, right? And it started, to your point before we started recording, like you guys, like that was a big piece of your company's, you know, focus was specifically nuclear power, because that was one of the few that really had the vision and maybe even the budget to really dedicate and have an air gapped or that type of system. But I think now, to your point, it's bigger, like more and more folks are seeing the value and the need for that level of rigor in their environments, in their OT spaces.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also because the awareness was there way before it was in other verticals and other parts of the industry. I think because of the criticality, because of the safety, because of, you know, what can go wrong in a nuclear power plant? Everybody's so critical. So even before cyber was a big issue like it is today, the potential risk was so big. So they were thinking about everything, all of the risks. You know, what can go wrong? Today, this understanding, the level of awareness, and also, you know, the level of risk is dramatically higher. And this understanding that bad things happen from the internet, that attacks happen, sometimes targeted specifically at you, sometimes just because you have a bank account, you know, and right. We succeeded. And sometimes just because, you know, virus propagates and malware propagates and, you know, you just do not want that to happen to your production environment.
Correct.
You know? So now it's becoming yep. dramatically wider, the use case, the usage. You know, we are today deployed in casinos. I know that some people treat them as critical infrastructure, but it's not the classic sure. definition. But you know, we're deployed in casinos. We're deployed in big campuses and buildings, protecting the building management system, which again is way on the other side of what people think of as the big utilities, you know, the big moving right. parts, the big turbines. We're talking about elevators and HVACs and sprinklers and air purification system that in a big building, if that seems those systems malfunction, in most cases, you need to evacuate the building. You know, and again, thinking of ransomware, we don't even need to think about, you know, nation-backed attacks or terror, just ransomware. If I'm getting into the real cheap system that controls your fire alarm, and I'm telling you, right. hey, Aaron, now I own that system, pay me $50,000. Or I shut it down and you need to evacuate this big building, this university yeah. campus, this high rise, this casino. You'll just pay me that money. It's better than anything else.
Correct.
So protecting them from the internet and protecting a nuclear power plant from the internet, different everything, but the same waterfall unidirectional gateway technology, which protects both.
Yeah, and I think, you know, unfortunately and fortunately, depending on how you look at it, we're seeing more and more events showing up in the news and the media. More and more people are seeing these. This is not fear selling. This is not hypothetical. These are not things that are just pretend that vendors are making up to try to, you know, fear sell. There's events constantly. I mean, we saw, you know, recently, you know, airports in the UK that were impacted by, you know, issues, and, you know, the CrowdStrike thing, which wasn't a cyber attack, but still, you know, spread. And there's so many things that go into this that now people are starting to realize, to your point, you know, casinos being a great example. Yeah, they're not technically critical infrastructure in that, you know, they're not one of the 17 critical infrastructures, you know, by the U.S. government or others, but to those businesses, they are critical. And whatever your thing is critical to your business, because usually in OT, that is the thing that makes you the money. Like if yeah. you are making widgets, if you're making cars, if you're making whatever you're making or selling, if that system goes down, it may not be critical to me as a human driving down the street, but it's absolutely critical to the people that work there, the shareholders, and the company's yeah. existence. So when those things go down, it is absolutely critical, which is why we have to be intentional about how we protect and what we do in an OT space, right?
Yeah, and we really try not to, we at Waterfall try not to sell by fear and so. But if as you said, this, you know, industrial process, this physical process that you run to which is the main, which is the core of your business. If I can make it unsafe and you need to shut it down, which is basic threat in ransomware. This is an unacceptable risk in most businesses, and if the damage, even the potential damage that happens from malware, which is now inside that control network, takes you days or weeks and sometimes months of downtime to clean up, fix, and make sure that now everything is back up and running and safe. Most of the businesses, that is for them an unacceptable risk.
100%.
So we don't need to go and talk about this big, you know, this adversary nation state will go and
right
and get into your networks, and we don't even need to get into there is this risk of humans being hurt or die, you know, there's sure. that too, there's that too,
sure.
but the daily threat, the one that happens day in day out, where there's this big economy supporting it, is ransomware, and the damage is unacceptable even just with that.
Absolutely. And you know, I talk about this all the time on my podcast, and obviously OT is vastly different. Obviously the risk is higher, the impact of an issue, an outage, things like that. To your point, not all of them involve, you know, threatening lives, but many of them do, right? There are legitimate things that put people's lives at risk, and you can actually injure, kill. I mean, I've been at sites where people have lost their life, not because of a cyber incident, but because of something to do with the system failing, right? And that system can fail from a misconfiguration, from human error, or it could be something like a, you know, a ransomware or something like that, right? So we already know that it's a higher risk, and the impact is a different impact than, you know, losing my, you know, Facebook account or whatever, right? But on the flip side of that, we also know that these systems are inherently at higher risk from the technology stack as well, because most of them are older technologies. I'm usually not patching them as frequently. I usually have a smaller staff that isn't 100% focused on technology. You know, there's so many factors that go against us in this OT space, and that you know, I remember I told you in the beginning, and I say this all the time, but you know, I was an asset owner for a power utility here in Texas, and we had 40 something power plants across the state of Texas. And I know you don't live in Texas, but if you've seen Texas on a map, it's a really big state. And if you've been here, like there's 6 to 8 hours driving distance from, you know, from my headquarters to where one of my power plants was. So it's not like I'm just a mile down the street or a couple of miles down the street. Like there's 10, 12 hours between sites at some of these locations just in my state. So when I'm looking at these things and the impact of them, it's huge and it's vastly different. So I had a team of six employees, and then I had some contractors, let's say 10 maybe total, on my team that supported 45 power plants plus mines plus all the things. And that was everything from the plant, from our, you know, connection, our OT side down, all of the technology in between, right? So on the flip side, the IT team, now granted, this is at a power utility company. Like that is our product. Our product is generating electricity. That's the only product we have. The IT team had a team, they had a dedicated server team, and they had a dedicated firewall team, and they had a dedicated networking team, they had a dedicated application team. They had 100 people probably in their IT organization that supported all this stuff. Now, I'm not saying they shouldn't have had those things, but I am saying it's a bit, in my perspective, a bit of the tail wagging the dog, and they had a lot bigger budget, way more people, way more training, way more, you know, expertise, where my guys had to know how to do the firewall, the VMware, the networking. Like they had to be able, they had to do all the technology. I had to expect one guy to be able to be a semi-expert in all of those technologies, not just be able to focus on, oh, I'm just going to be the firewall guy, right? So all of these things make it that much more difficult. And then I throw in all these new technologies and firewalls and all the patching and everything that goes with that. It's overwhelming very quickly.
Yeah. 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 I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where, you know, the biggest thing that we always focused on was how do I reduce the risk? I can't get the risk to zero. It's never zero. Yeah. Ever, ever, ever will it ever be zero.
If you want to take it to zero, shut down your company.
Exactly.
And there's always There's always That's risk it. Attached right. to business. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, but how can we reduce the risk? And, you know, many times, you know, we have these conversations where we're accepting risk, or we're understanding, we're quantifying, you know, we're putting numbers associated to risk, and we say, oh, we're going to accept that risk. I feel many times the risk that's accepted, and it's getting better, I believe, but I think many organizations accept risk because they don't truly understand what that risk is. Like, if they really understood what that risk really is, I don't think there's any way they would actually accept it the way that they do. I think they would want to mitigate it and reduce the likelihood of that risk or the impact of that risk instead of just accepting it.
I think you're right. I think it's, it is in a way, a bit local. I mean, there are industries which the situation is better than others and worse, and geographies where this is the case, and others that it's less. Yeah. From my perspective, from the Wolford perspective, selling to these types of customers, you know, really across the globe, we see that where the government, either through regulators or through types of guidelines or guidance that they provide, have the ability to educate the practitioners on what the real risks are, because we see places where people learn how to protect systems, which is mm-hmm. great, okay? But they don't learn what bad guys know how to do, know right. what to do, okay? So they have these building blocks, and good people, good intentions, you know, professional people tell them, hey, you know, you put this building block here, and then you can use this one, and choose either these two and use them, and that's the good thing to do. Now, you know, the practitioners, again, everybody is in general a good person and good intentions and want to do the best. They do what they were taught to, but without understanding, like really understanding, what is the risk, what is the threat, how it looks like, what is, you know, what is the way that an attack happens? How a bad person views a target infrastructure? Okay, well, without that understanding, it's really hard to do a good job. It's not because they don't want to. It's not because they are lazy or incompetent. It's just they are lacking a part of the problem. And we see that when governments do a better job in, and there's a problem because they don't want to share that information in many cases. There's sometimes a disconnect. Okay. In the US, it's more common than others. You're in Texas, so.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want the federal government getting into my business.
Exactly.
So we see that in other countries, where there's more, they're more interconnected or they're more open to talk, freely. The situation is better, you know, because again, when you as a defender understand, the real level of threat you are, up against, you do a better job. I think over time we'll see this improving. You and I have been in this business for a long while. It has not improved at the rate that it should have. Okay. I think that the bad guys has improved dramatically. More than the good guys, and this is something that we as an industry need to think really hard about. Off.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And, you know, unfortunately, without throwing people under the bus or naming names, et cetera, because it doesn't matter, there's still people that are out there screaming or arguing that there's never been OT cyber incidents, or, you know, that there's not enough and this is fear selling and all this kind of stuff. And unfortunately, it, as we know, it's just not true. I can't talk about it because I have NDAs and all the things, but I've personally been in OT incidents in critical infrastructure around the world, literally in where I live now, on other continents, specifically OT related incident response where bad things have happened in a cyber perspective, impacting and affecting OT systems. But yet, because they're not on the front page of the news, others will say, oh, well, those things never happened. That wasn't an OT incident. Like, you know, I've had this argument around Colonial Pipeline, how Colonial Pipeline wasn't an OT attack. You're right. It hit an IT system, but it impacted OT. Does it matter that the system was an IT or an OT? The end result is the problem. And that's where we need to better understand this. And to your point, we have great people that are like you, like I, that want to do the right thing, but we need to make sure they have the understanding and skill set, or partner them with people that are coming from that offensive side. Because if you haven't been that offensive role, then you don't necessarily know what to look for and how to defend against those things. So you think you're doing the right things, and you are, but you're missing all this stuff over here that you don't know to look for.
Exactly. And you know, because of that, one thing that we do in Waterfall, we are tracking all of the public incidents that happen, which are, you know, OT attacks, or at least attacks that has an OT impact. We are documenting them throughout the year and creating, compiling all of that in a big annual threat report. And you might think that the numbers seem a bit low, but each and every one of the incidents and the cyber attacks and the ones that has physical damages, okay, these are what we track, is a public incident that you can go see the source of the publication and verify it yourself. This is not, you know, we're not trying to exaggerate. These are the facts. And the thing that we all know is if we document 100 attacks, there are probably 10,000.
Right.
Okay. Because in many cases, many geographies, many countries, many verticals, there is no requirement to make a cyber attack public.
Correct.
And if they don't have to, they won't. You know why? Sure. It's embarrassing. It's bad for reputation and etc. So they don't. And those that didn't end up with a physical consequence, because maybe we paid the ransom.
Okay.
Not public. You know, sometimes there's no apparent physical consequence. Why? Because one of my sites went down, but the other one is still okay, so I don't need to publicly say anything. So I'm not saying anything. You know, or nobody noticed, so nobody wrote about it. But the fact is, and as you said, you've been in incident response activities on, and I'm sure most of these were never public. You know, so you know, we are producing that threat report just to show the trend, just to show the examples, and to do that without being accused of, hey, you are, you know,
right,
exaggerating. And so these are facts. You can go to our website and download the you know, all of the reports from the recent years and see the trends and analyze it yourself. Things are not getting better.
That's right.
There's enough business for us for the next few years for sure.
That's right. Yeah, you know, and to your point, right? You know, I think it's trending upwards as we have more, you know, as we integrate more of these OT systems because we want more access and more capabilities, or, you know, a lot of the stuff came from the vendors, you know, the VARs are the ones that actually, hey, this thing has Active Directory now and all these type of things and firewalls. And so I'm connecting all these things to my corporate network. I always assumed when I was an asset owner, I looked at the corporate network like the internet. I assumed it was bad. I assumed it was at risk, and I used it. I didn't trust anything from that. I, you know, very much a zero trust architecture mindset way back, you know, all the way back in what, 2010, when I officially started, you know, when we started calling it OT or whatever back then, you know, even though I was kind of adjacent to it then, I was still in IT, but I supported OT-ish systems. But, you know, we always assumed that corporate was, you know, bad. I had to assume that because I didn't control it. I didn't know. And that doesn't mean bad from a China, like you said before. It doesn't mean that a nation state is attacking. It just means that I don't want some IT guy, because it's happened, some IT guy making a change on a firewall or a network thing that's going to impact my OT system. Not all of these things are malicious, you know, nation state attacks. That doesn't change the fact that they impacted my system. And that's unacceptable in these environments. Even a oops.
Sometimes it's a server that managed to reach out to the internet, get an update, install the update automatically, and did a reset.
Yep.
Shit.
And it broke. Yeah, it broke everything.
You know, or just did a reset when it shouldn't be reset because it's.
Yeah.
Controlling a dangerous process that should never have the control network, you know, server off the grid.
Absolutely.
You know, or as you said, it breaks. You know, sometimes you run an update and it doesn't work.
Yeah. So all this to say, I want to dive a little into y'all's new product as well, because I obviously. You look at my architecture I just talked about, right? I had a team of six people. We had power plants all over the state of Texas. I didn't have enough people to have one at every site. So we're supporting, we had way more facilities than I had people to be at, which meant I had to be able to remotely access all of those environments. How do I do that? Did I just allow them remote access directly to the control network? No, I had all of this rigor, and it was a pain in the backside the way that I had to do it back then. We used Microsoft terminal services. I had a boundary remote access that we'd jump into multi-factor authentication, then jump into a different one. We were like Daisy. It was like, you know, the movie, you know, Inception. It was like I jumped into this, and then I jumped into this, and then I jumped into this, and you had to remember which window are you in. It was complicated, but we had to do that to make sure that I wasn't allowing my control network. Like you said in the beginning, I didn't ever want my control network to be on the internet. Like, that was never acceptable. So it was really complex. The vendors didn't like it. The operators didn't like it. But it was the best that we had at the time to be able to enable my team and others to be able to remotely control and access and manage and maintain these systems.
Yeah. And like in Inception, at the end, you always have that spinner to make sure that you're still in reality.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, some asset owners, some sites, quite a lot of them, by the way, do not allow remote access. Some do. And as you said, when they do that, they put in everything they can and pray really good. others just say, you know, I'll pay more. I'll have more people on site, or I'll have a bit less of the quality of service that I want, but people will drive all day between the sites and do things locally. But again, as things progress, as the world is advancing, as we had COVID, you know, the big push towards remote access into OT happened through COVID, because you just didn't have the ability to get on site. People were confined to their houses, or couldn't be more than X people on the same site at the same time. You just couldn't have them, and it didn't work. People, you know, vendors from other companies you would never allow in, vendors from, you know, people from vendors are from a different country, you know, irrelevant anymore. So, but you need to keep the lights, you need to keep the lights on and the business running and the systems running. And so you allowed remote access. And you know, what you just said, that you had that system getting in and a jump station and a multi-factor authentication and another thing and all of that. At the end, you had your control network with a firewall.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
That bouncer from an hour ago, that, you know, all good intentions, and you added everything on top of that, and you monitor it, and you patch it, and you add more and more and more layers on top of it. At the end, it's a firewall between your OT network and the Wild Wild West, which is the outside.
Yep.
And this is what Waterfall fixed again when we envisioned and designed Hera, hardware enforced remote access. Again, trying to keep things really high level and not dive too deep into technology. All of the remote access solutions that are out there, you know, general ones or OT specific ones, it doesn't really matter. All of them, you know, suffer from the same basic three issues. The first of all is they require a firewall at your perimeter of the OT network. Okay, game over. Okay, game over. There's no way to fix that.
Yeah.
The other thing is the underlying protocol that carries the remote access session.
Uh-huh.
All of them. Okay, I'm saying most everywhere, but in reality, it's all of them. Okay, just if I missed something. Okay, these protocols, really good ones. The products are really good products. Okay, but these protocols are super complicated. Okay. Windows Remote Desktop, you know, RDP. I don't want to name names. Okay, it's not specific against any of the vendors or the standards. Super complex protocols, unfilterable. So you have that firewall. You know, big mistake, but you have that firewall to allow a remote access protocol pass through it means open a port any to any. There's no filtering. There's no control. I'm not even talking about those protocols that are encrypted end to end, which in some, you know, there's some point of view say, hey, that's more secure. But in this one, it's less secure. They're encrypted point to point, meaning that the firewall cannot filter them, that cannot even add the residual security that a firewall can add, which is see if the protocol is weird, see if something bad is happening. They just cannot do that. The last thing is the device that you're remoting from, that you as the user, your laptop, okay, your desktop, which you use to remote into, is weak from security standpoint. How do we know that that's you? How do we know that you're remoting in from the laptop that we issued you as an employee of our company? Okay, we don't really know how to do that. So we designed Hera to solve these three things that are shared, these three big security issues that are shared across all of the remote access solutions in the market, and yet providing a full-blown, interactive, advanced remote access experience. We've designed it in a way that you have a special unidirectional gateway Okay, it's like the one we discussed at the beginning, but this special one, this HERA gateway, is a unidirectional gateway that you deploy inbound in your OT perimeter. And it has, on top of just being a really good, you know, unidirectional gateway, this gateway has specialized hardware that we use to filter our protocol. I'll talk about it. And mm-hmm. to keep our encryption keys and etc. So our gateway has a TPM, Trusted Platform Module, which is like a small crypto chip that's inside the motherboard that knows how mm-hmm. to really like a secure enclave securing crypto keys. We have that inbound gateway. We have an outbound gateway. They are not connected between them. There are just one inbound gateway and outbound gateway. And we have a client application that you run on your laptop or desktop, you know, that you use to remote in. The only prerequisite we have from that laptop or desktop is that it will have a TPM inside the motherboard. That's a basic requirement today. Okay. It's like all business grade computers and laptops have a TPM deployed in them. And the way HERA works, and bear with me for a second, but you know, you'll need to envision it. And again, like what we did with the unidirectional gateway, this is a different way of solving a problem. So you fire up your HERA client. Hi, I'm Aaron. You know, you log in, you authenticate yourself using whatever systems that you have in your enterprise network. Mm-hmm. And you say, okay, I want to remote into, you know, this site to site A. Okay. And from now on, every keystroke that you, every keyboard key that you strike and every mouse move inside our client application, every keystroke is being captured, sent to the TPM where it's encrypted and signed to the HERA gateway that we talked about before, which is on site A OT perimeter, and sent to that gateway. The HERA gateway receives that encrypted. So you type, hello, my name is Aaron. Okay. So HELL, each keystroke in your laptop, encrypted, signed, and sent to our inbound gateway. This inbound gateway on the outside verifies whatever they want to verify, but we are on the outside, so we don't trust that too much. We verify anyways, just, you know, to be cautious. And we send it in one way only into the internal side of our gateway. There, we verify the protocol again through our hardware. And this is a very simple protocol. Okay, keystrokes, mouse moves, you know, ASCII codes. Encrypted and signed in a very, very simple packet, in a way. See that it's our type of packet. Then we verify the digital signature through the internal TPM that we have there. Okay, at the beginning, we do a key exchange. When we mm-hmm. install the systems, we do a secure key exchange between these two, between your client TPM and the HERA gateway TPM. Mm-hmm. So we verify the digital signature. If it's good, we continue, we decrypt, and we get the keystrokes. Then these keystrokes are activated on the target device that you want to remote into. So there's a device. It can be a Windows server, a Linux server, or whatever application. It doesn't really matter. It can be an HMI of a embedded device. You log into, and your keystrokes and mouse moves are activated on that. The screen of that system, we stream it back, encrypt it through the TPM that we were just talking about, and then stream it out, encrypted, through the one-way outbound gateway, back into your laptop, where it's verified, decrypted through the TPM, and displayed on your screen. So all of that under the hood, what you see is you see the screen of the remote device, and everything that you do, your typing and mouse moves, encrypted, signed, sent, got in, verified, decrypted, activated, and the screen is sent back. You see everything that you do, you see the effect of it on the remote right. screen being displayed here on your laptop in near real time. You know, our latencies are below the threshold that you'll notice.
Yep.
You are, in your mind, you are remoting in to that computer where, in fact, there's no TCP/IP going back and forth. There's no networking going from your computer, from your network, from the internet into the OT network. There's no firewall. There's one way in that verifies cryptographically and based on a one-way only hardware that those packets are coming from that specific computer. We can verify this protocol as much as we would like. You can do that. It's a super simple protocol, keystrikes, mouse moves. No firewall, simple protocol, very strong coupling between the user, the laptop or computer through the TPM, and the inbound gateway through the TPM that are coupled, you know, at the deployment. So this is a bit complex. I sure. apologize.
But no, it's okay.
It's, you know, it's like magic. You know, if you're thinking about all the things we're doing under the hood, while at the end, the user just sees the remote, it's as if he's sitting in front of that computer, but now he's in a coffee shop, you know, in the neighborhood where he lives in, remoting in without TCP/IP, without opening up the OT network, without using firewalls, remoting in to a closed network, keeping it closed.
Correct. And that's the key, right? It is most other architectures, to your point, we're going through a firewall, we're having to punch a hole to enable this protocol through, and I can't filter it, and I have no ability to really understand what's in that protocol. RDP is a great example of that. I can do all sorts of things across RDP. I can copy and paste files. I can do all sorts of things. And to your point, the firewall just has to, you either let it in or you don't. And as we yeah. know, and this is diving further in, but you know, TCP, all day long, you know, you hear people talk about, well, it's a one-way firewall rule. It's outbound only. Okay, but TCP is a two-way protocol, right? So yes. it by definition, is packets are coming both ways down that path. There's no, yes. if you're using TCP, it is two ways. Like, yes, it's initiated from inside out, but it is a two-way handshake. Like, look at the way, you know, go back to your DNA, you know, books from, you know, 1985, and it's the same thing it's always been. TCP has always been a two-way communication. Yep. UDP is one way, of course, but still it's, you know, I'm looking for SYN, ACK, you know, SYN, ACK, et cetera. It is a two-way conversation.
UDP is one way, but the underlying physical layer is bidirectional.
Correct. Correct.
And the firewall right. is a device that allows data to go in both directions, even if you configure a port just to allow UDP. It still has bugs, vulnerabilities, misconfiguration, all the things we discussed before.
And then you start adding encryption and you start adding complex protocols that you don't have to have, you know, everything cut. Like, it just adds so much complexity. To your point, we need to be able to have a safe way. I don't like saying secure, but we need to have a safe way that we can enable these capabilities without increasing the risk drastically. And that it's always going to increase risk because it's obviously it's better to have the person sitting at the keyboard in the facility. That is the best way to do it. You can't yeah. always do that. So what is the next best thing to do that without poking holes in my firewall that's allowing traffic in, because that is drastically increasing the risk to my environment because of all those holes I've now had to patch or punch exactly. through that firewall and all the other exactly. things that come with that. And to your, to your point. So I love this. I think they go hand in hand. I appreciate you diving into the technical side of things a bit there, because I think it's important for people to really understand. And this is not to bash firewalls. This is not to bash, secure mode access. This is not any of that, right? It's like there's a scenario and there's a use case depending on the use, the validity, the impact to your organization. How critical is this system? And how much do you need to make sure that nothing bad happens, right? And when those things, nuclear power is a great example of that, but that's not the only where these things are critical enough that we need to be really sure that nobody can get in and that I'm not allowing other things in this door when I'm allowing remote access into these spaces or whatever.
The market for HERA is renewable energy, where you have solar plants and wind farms that are designed to be remotely controlled. These guys that you don't have an office, in a solar plant. Nope. These are all designed from the get-go to be remote controlled. But let's do it in a manner that is creating the least added risk to the safety and operational status of our control network. Yeah. Same with almost any other type of control network. If you must have somebody remoting in to your water purification system of whatever municipality, because it's spread out, because you don't have people on site, because it's a system of a vendor that doesn't have local people, so you have to do it right. In a safe way.
Absolutely. Yeah?
Putting firewalls and VPNs and saying, no, it's, we're good.
Good enough.
Maybe was okay in the 1990s. It's not okay today.
I agree 100%. Yeah, I see the tide shifting to your point. I expected and hoped it would be further down the road than we are today. I think finally we're starting to see budgets are starting to get better aligned. Executives that are non-OT people, they're non-cyber people, are starting to see the real value and criticality of these things. So along with that leads into my wrap-up question here that I kind of preempted you with. In the next 5 to 10 years, what's one thing you see come up over the horizon? Maybe one thing that's concerning and one thing that's exciting regarding all of this.
Well, I don't know. For me, everything here is exciting. Okay, this is... I like this industry. I like the people that work here. I'm always I don't even know how to say it. I'm so happy to see a customer that understands, okay, this is what I'm getting out of it. I'm so better off with using this technology. We come in, we deploy their systems, and now they are dramatically safer than before, and we have examples from here to the end of the world in so many places where we deployed our systems, so many countries and states and societies that are just in a safer position now than before they deployed us. So this is what excites me, and I'm guessing it will excite me in the next 5 to 10 years too. I think the situation. I think the cyber threat will become bigger and more imminent in the next years because of the use of automation based on AI. So it'll just be easier to run more attacks in parallel, in a bigger volume, in a bigger frequency on the same target, and get in through somewhere. Okay. And again, to get what you want, you just need to get in somewhere.
Correct.
Okay, you don't need, when you're protecting, you need to protect everything all the time. When you're hacking in, you just need to succeed you know, through somewhere in.
Right.
So having AI instead of manual power just makes it easier and will just make it, you know, cheaper, and because of that, more effective and more used. So that's what I'm you know, seeing as what's going to happen in the future. And we will need to find better ways to make sure that we are, and this is a different angle, but you know, we always used to say and trust the fact that worst case, so Aaron will call me and say, hey, Leo, this is Aaron. Let's do this or that. Or, you know, that operation that you noticed, I actually did that. So, let's approve it and let's move on. With AI, deepfake, voice mimicking, video mimicking, that fallback, you know, there's always this, you know, people say, okay, we are back to the Stone Age. We're writing things on papers and calling. I'm not sure that will work with AI. And
right.
How do I know that Aaron is actually calling me when your voice can be so easily mimicked and your video can also? So it's not there yet. The voice may be, but video is still not there, but it will be.
Sure. Yeah.
And we will need to find better ways to do that. In smaller countries, you know, I'm based out of Israel. So in smaller countries with smaller population, it's a bit better because, you know, we know each other personally more than, you know, more, you know, with smaller communities, more tightly knit, it'll just be a bit harder. But again, good AI, 5 to 10 years from now, how do I know it's my mother calling? You know, you won't know. Yeah. So this is something that we will all, it's not specific to OT, but this is an OT fallback as it is, as an IT fallback as it is, you know, it's a basic fallback we all have.
Absolutely.
We can always fall back on, I'll just call him and verify. So we'll need to find better ways for that. And the bigger force of attacks that I said before, these are the things that will go and grow and be a bigger threat on our industry and others. And you know, as I said before, there's enough business. There's enough business for all of us for a while.
I agree. Yeah. It's not declining for sure. You know, fortunately and unfortunately, there's not that many people that understand and have the experience and background that I do and people like us do, right? In coming up in IT and working in the plants and all these different spaces, there's just not enough of us to go around. You know, again, we see that I have this conversation all the time. If an incident happens, something really bad happens, and all of these people that have hired these, you know, incident response companies, if they all call, because there's not that many of them, if they all called them all at the same time because something really bad spread across, you know, this certain industry, who are they going to go to? And then what do the rest of the people do, right? And that's where there's just so many problems that we need to be able to solve. And I love products that come out and you're solving for a real issue and you have a real solution. Not that other, again, I'm not trying to badmouth any other products. I was a product owner for sure, Industrial Defender, and there's a value for a lot of those products. It's just a matter of, you know, there's a difference between, you know, providing a real concrete solution to things and then, you know, policy, procedures, all those things are needed. But sometimes you just need that, you know, to be able to close the door and lock it and know that, hey, that's good. I can go focus elsewhere, right? There's other things I need to solve. That's not the only thing that you can't just put in something like that and be done, but at least I know I put that in and I'm okay there. Like I can focus my attention elsewhere and solve other problems now.
Yeah. Agreed.
So what is the, thank you for taking all the time today. Like what's the call to action? How do people find out more if they want to, you know, look at a waterfall? How does that look, or remote access? What, you know, kind of call to action for everybody listening?
waterfall-security.com. We are spread out. We have people in every continent across the world. We have subsidiaries covering most of the regions. We can speak to you in your own language and communicate, especially, of course, in the U.S., but, you know, Europe, APAC, the Middle East. Reach out through any means that you feel, and we will help either, you know, of course, our products, but also, as I said, we have our reports, we have our expert that can share information and consult with you. And, you know, the best thing to do is be well educated. After that, you can make your own choices.
Absolutely. And I say it all the time. It's one of the reasons I do this podcast. Like I'm not getting rich off of this. I don't make money off of this. Like I do this because I enjoy having these conversations, because I think there's a value in these conversations, because not everybody's had my experience or your experience, but they can listen to a conversation like this and get the value and the knowledge from that, and then take that and put that into their own scenario, the environment they're looking at, and use that to their benefit. And that's the value I see. And that's why I do this. It's why I'm so passionate about having these conversations, and very much appreciative for folks like you coming on and sharing your knowledge with the audience, myself as well. So thank you so much. It was great spending time with you today. I appreciate your time. I know you're busy, and I very much appreciate you sharing with us today in your evening there in Israel versus my, you know, almost noon here in Texas.
Thank you, Aaron, and all of the listeners, and, you know, hope it was fun.
Thanks for joining us on Protect It All, where we explore the crossroads of IT and OT cybersecurity. Remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts to stay ahead in this ever-evolving field. Until next time.